The following may contain NSFW content and is intended for mature audiences. Parental guidance is suggested.
In a world of sorry-ass social justice warriors,
politically correct panty waists,
and really fake news, there still exists brash, bold dudes with balls who tell it like it really is, really was, and really should be. This is the honest, raw, real Dude Say with Jones and Mike. Jones is a 40-something transcendental meditating hockey-playing vegan who's living the bachelor dream in the heart of the city. Mike's a 40-something beer-swilling suburban married father of four who's traded in motorcycles and marathons for a minivan. They say the things real dudes think, and real women want to hear them say. No topics taboo. Nothing's off limits. No holds are barred. About everything from women to pop culture, millennials to race, news, views, family, money, and more. This is the Dude Say when they're uncensored, unfiltered, and unafraid. Join the show and say some shit too. 872-701-0999. Tweet at Jones and Mike. See and hear us at jonesandmike.com. This is Shit Dude Say. Dude Say. Dude Say.
Jones, I don't want to bust you out, but it's a complete bro code violation what you have perpetrated, foisted upon us. Inviting a chick to cards for the first time ever, not cool. It ain't cool, man. And it's a violation of the bro code. I'm throwing the flag on you, Jones. What do you have to say in your defense, Jones?
I knew out of everyone that participates in our card game that has been ongoing for 13 years now, I knew you would be the most upset. And I knew when I put it out to the crowd, when I put it out to the poker guys and the email,
the poker pals,
the poker pals, when I put it out there to say, hey, first time ever, there's a female invite going out. I knew you would be the one that would take it the hardest. And I thought to myself, Mike is going to offer up a protest, even if he doesn't want to protest it. He feels like just one of these guys in this group has to protest it, and I know the others won't. And even though I don't care,
well, no, bullshit.
I still know there wants to be.
No. You know that I am a guy who
hates women.
Well, there's that. There is my deep-seated hatred of women. And we will talk more about that in a little while with the Conor McGregor, Floyd Mayweather farce. You've been taking to calling things bread and circuses recently. Circuses? I like that. I'm a bread and circuses kind of guy as well. But I'm a traditional dude. I think that, you know, a card game that's been going on for how many years? How many years is it? You said 13?
Well, it's almost 10. 13. It will be 13 this November.
Yeah.
We've never missed a game. I'm saying the group.
Every 2 months.
Individuals have missed individual games, but the group has never not held its bi-monthly poker night in 13
years. When you're there, it's definitely bi-monthly. So,
not funny.
Yeah. So, yeah, for 13 years. So how this started was our buddy Andy got married. I can't believe it was 13 years ago. Are you sure? Yeah. You sure it wasn't 10?
August 2004, and then the first poker night was that November.
Oh, my God. And he gave everyone who stood up in his wedding, pet peeve, sidebar, when people say, I stood up to the wedding. It's like, you stood up to the wedding? You opposed it. You were one of the people that stood up and said, I oppose this wedding. So you stand up in a wedding. You don't stand up to a wedding. So we stood up in his wedding, and all the groomsmen got a set of poker chips in a nice wooden box that had our initials on it and a little note. It was very thoughtful. A little note was in there. Did he come up with this idea, by the way, or was it his future wife, the beautiful Mrs. Bartek?
I don't know. I feel like it was his because poker was really huge at that time.
So oh,
I do,
yeah.
I feel
yeah.
like it was his, and the note was very sweet. I dare say it was sweet.
Yeah, it was like, by accepting these chips, you know, you hereby, you know, agree to host cards once a year. So there were six of us, including him.
Yes.
Right. So, and like one dude has never come, like he's come once in 13 years. And then another guy, you know, is everyone's got a friend who like literally.
Disappears.
What's that?
who disappears?
Oh, yeah, totally, dude. In fact, my mom even was talking about how one of her friends, when she was married, she disappeared, and then her husband died, then she came around again, and then she met some dude, and then she disappeared again, and then, so this guy's like this woman. Everyone, I guess every group's got a guy or a girl who, when they're dating or married, they disappear as a friend, and then when they're single again, they pop back into your life. So that guy's gone, but then there's the core of us, and the core of us, every 2 months, get together and play Texas Hold'em at one of our houses. And you're right. We've never missed. People have missed for various reasons, child things, family commitments, vacations. But for the most part, it's
always
gone
been
on.
Hosted.
Yes, it's a revolving game, and we have a couple of years ago we started inviting, maybe about 5 years ago, and a buddy would come by and fill a seat if somebody couldn't make it, or an extra guy would come over, some friend of the host. I don't believe, very rarely will someone invite someone to someone else's house. But, I mean, we have these unwritten rules. Like they say that in baseball. It's almost to the point of annoyance. There are unwritten rules. And so our unwritten rule was, it's dudes. And so for the first time ever, you've invited a chick. Not only a chick, but like a young chick who will like is young enough to be our daughter.
Yes, certainly for a couple members of the group, like legitimately would be their daughter. She could actually be all of our daughters, but we would have had really stressful high school years. But there's one or two members of the group where she would literally be the, she literally could be the daughter of,
she could be all of our daughters. Like if we started at like 21 or 22, we would have had, she'd be young enough to be our daughter.
Little out of that, but still.
Whatever.
Still,
it's not like if we started at 13. It's not like we were like Villy and Mary Kay Letourneau. Legit. She's young enough to be our daughter. So you're assuring us that she can hang.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I feel like she can hang. You know, it was one of those things. So I was at work and the topic came up like, hey, what's going on this weekend? What are you guys doing? And I just mentioned, oh, I got a poker game, you know, and I didn't put like a lot of thought into it. It was just one of those things like there's a couple of girls around the office. I was like, hey, if anyone wants to come hang out with some 40-year-old dudes and play some poker. And one of the girls stepped up and was like, I would do that. I would definitely do that.
It's weird.
And it was kind of at that point, it wasn't. Like, there was no, here's the thing that makes me feel good about it in terms of, like, is it a violation of a bro code? If it's a violation of a bro code, I guess it just simply is that. But that there was no hesitation on her part. She didn't say, well, what kind of poker? What are you guys going to have wine there? There was nothing. Like, she's a beer drinker.
She's not being high maintenance at all.
No, yeah, I mean, it's not like she's like a bow hunter or something like that, but she golfs, she drinks beer, like...
That would be tougher than me, honestly. That's always that, and that's another unwritten rule. You and I are the two kind of panty waists at the table. The rest of the dudes are like firefighters, but then they're also contractors on the side. They build, like, houses. One dude built his own house with his bare hands. Another guy, like, operates big machinery, like cranes and stuff. Like, they do, and he fixes, their hands are all, like, meat hooks. And then, like, me and you, our hands look like, you know, little violinists. Hands, little dainty hands, not a callus to be found.
But we know more about sports than all of them.
Okay, yes. So when this,
so we can say that.
Yes.
So I get it. I understand. I feel like there was something in the strength of her answer that made me feel like this will be okay. That there was no hesitation, and I think maybe that is kind of. You know, you talk about gender differences or whatever. You know, women tend to be more thinkers, contemplate. Men are reactive. So in that moment, while she never lost her femininity, she had a very reactive way of like, I would do that, sure. And just put it out there. So I was like, okay. But I knew once she said yes, I was like, okay, cool. Different dynamic. Sometimes it's a good thing to have a different dynamic. It's not, this isn't a wife, fiance, or girlfriend situation. So I still think that fits into the different dynamic, could create a different energy there. She was aggressive enough to know, like, hey, I know this isn't a poker night, an all-male 40-something poker night. I'll be there. And she dove right in. So I think that says something. Had she even hesitated for a second and said, oh, I'd do it. Will you have wine?
Yeah, yeah. Then you'd have been like, yeah. But then how would you have gotten out of it, though? You wouldn't have been able to get out of it.
No, I know. I understand that. I'm just saying.
Was there a little part of you that was like, oh, shit, I'm painted into a corner here. I work with this person. I can't, you know, I can't say no now. What if the guys, because you put it to a vote, and that was, I got to admit, that was pretty cool. You put it to a vote. The vote could have gone 5-0 on you, and then you would have had to go to her and be like, the guys don't want you to play.
I know, and here's the thing, like, I kind of, even when I did the vote, like, I knew, I was like, okay, I knew that this was going to be a thing. I knew it was going to be a bro code thing. So yeah. I knew I couldn't just let you guys show up and be the, you know, on the day of the game, be like, oh, yeah, and Savannah should be stopping by in about 10 minutes. Like, oh, Savannah, that's an interesting name. Yeah. How do you know him? And it's like, oh, no, she's a girl. She, you know, she went to Neuqua Valley High School, where your daughter's going to go next year.
Yeah, Mike. Weird, dude. And she, yeah, just a few years. They could have practiced, you know, like two ships passing in the night.
I'm sure they'll have had the same teachers.
I'm sure there are still pictures of her, like the class of whatever, 2011. I'm sure it's still on the wall.
I knew that I couldn't say, what is she? I think she's class of 2012.
Jesus Christ.
But I knew I couldn't just
nuts,
say,
man.
I knew I couldn't just say, oh, hey, you know, this person's showing up. I knew I had to put it out there. But at the same time, I really kind of felt like the vote. If you're asking if there was a point where I was anticipating an answer, when I put out the vote on email, that's where I was faking the funk. Because I knew even if the guys wouldn't want to do it, they were still not going to vote it down with the except. I knew you would say something, but I had a feeling the other guys wouldn't.
Yeah,
they
because
did say some things like, oh, hey, well.
Yeah, of course, one of them, you know, going through a divorce. I mean, that's the thing. He's, you know, oh, hey, going through a divorce right now. This is going to be great. Sure, invite a chick to poker. You know, like. Like, he literally, the term poker is taking on a whole new meaning for him right now.
Yeah, until she shows up, and then he's just silent.
I don't know, man. I don't know. That guy can pull ass, oddly. Out of all of us, he pulls ass.
I don't see this happening.
Face it.
Or I don't see
that. Okay, so imagine that. Did that go through your mind? Like, what if one of the poker pals bangs my coworker? That's not going to work out. How would that work out well for you?
Well, it's not a matter of will it work out well for me, but she's a grown woman. She controls her vagina.
Yeah, I know. I know. I mean, I wouldn't say. This is why you don't mix it.
If she walked out the door with Bill, I wouldn't say, Savannah, you get back here.
No, if you saw that, like, okay, so what if you see that, like, you know, she's flirting with one of the guys and he's flirting back? Wouldn't you pull the guy aside and be like, hey, by the way, you can't bang anybody that I invite to cards. That's the whole reason why I voted no. Like,
so that's a rule? That's a homophobic rule.
Yeah.
So in the past, when men invited other men to the party, if they wanted to bang that other guy, they couldn't?
Yeah.
That's homophobic.
I've looked across the table and I've been like, you know, I could see banging Ralph. He seems like a pretty dope dude. And he has just giant hands. I wonder what those feel like engulfing me. You know, so that's the thing. Like, people ask us, you and I, we went to an all-boys Catholic high school, as you well know. I think
Why'd
you wish you were
like
still
that?
There. You know, people ask, you know, how was it going to high school with just boys? Well, didn't that suck? And we always resoundingly, and I think almost every guy that I know would say the same thing. We loved that respite. The whole world, especially in that age, you know, 14 to 18, you're all testosterone up and you're just trying to figure it out and get, you know, you're just wanting to get laid all the time. And that was 8 hours a day when we had to just put it in our back pocket and focus on other things. And we were, even though looking, you know, in eighth grade looking forward to it. We were like, this is going to suck. But once we got in it, we were like, this is great. This is a nice thing. You can go to school all messy or stinky or whatever. There's no pressure. Dudes aren't fighting. Dudes were fighting, but dudes weren't fighting over chicks the way they would be. Like, there was just a lot to like about the all-boys experience. I look at cards the same way, dude. You can't... Once you introduce vaginas into the equation, I think the chemistry gets all screwed up.
Well, this is one. This is one time. We'll see how it goes.
And that's why I'm a man of convention and tradition, and... unless we were sitting there and we're playing and no one's talking, no one's even talking about hanging drywall or boats or any of the shit that you and I go what if we had ever had a game where no one was talking, I'd be like, okay, I get what Jones is doing here. He's throwing us a curveball, trying to mix it up a little bit. I dig that, but it hasn't been like that because we only see each other every 2 months. And now I'm casting the role of, old curmudgeon, and that sucks.
Well, here's the thing. I really think it's a one-off thing. I mean, the reality is I don't see you guys inviting any women to a poker game where all of a sudden it's going to become this regular thing and it's like co-ed poker night. I don't really see that happening.
Yeah, but
and actually,
wives
she'll probably, out of every guy there, she'll probably drink the second next to you. She'll probably be drinking the most beer.
No, really?
Yeah.
She can take the tube home too, right? She can take the L home, right?
She might Uber at that point of the night, but yeah.
Right, and I'm the one who has to drive, so she may drink me under the table, Jones.
I don't know. Once you get going.
Yeah, I know. Even if I'm driving. When you add in vaginas, it changes the dynamic. I think you could see some guys clamming up. There could be inappropriate comments that could just be dodgy.
Are you worried about yourself in inappropriate comments? What are your personal concerns for you, Mike Noonan?
I mean, I don't ever worry about inappropriate comments, as you well know.
You make them.
It's a blessing and a curse. I have no filter, and I have no interest in installing a filter. So I'm not going to start now. I'm not going to hold back. But as you know, when I go all in, I drop trowel. I don't know how the tradition started, but it's become something that we expect. Sometimes people have their father-in-law play, and I still still do it. And sometimes there's a little dribble mark and stuff, and then you guys all razz me and stuff. And so when I go all in and the pants come down,
she's going to be fine with it. I already told her about it. Oh. And the other girls at work already know about it, too. They've all talked about it.
Wait a second. You were like, just so you know.
Well, that's the part that was the biggest thing. So I didn't want to go in the same way. I didn't want to have you guys show up on the night of poker and just go, oh, by the way, 24-year-old woman's showing up. I knew I had to let you guys know in advance. I had to let her know. And because I was talking to the other girls at the place, hey, you guys want to play poker? I had to let them know that there was a member of the group that when he goes all in on the bet, drops his pants to the ground and through his underwear, through the cloth of his underwear, grabs his testicles and his penis and slaps them down on the table. You have to let someone know that.
Oh my God, I sound like a fucking lunatic.
It is the best part of the night, though. And then we just quietly listen to wait to hear your gonads hit the table.
Have you ever heard a sound? I know I say I'm going to bring the boom, but I don't think I've ever heard a sound.
I don't know. I don't think I have. I think in my mind, I think I hear just the faintest whoosh.
A little wisp.
But it's the best. And it's so funny. It's so hard to get the attention of 4, 5, 6, 7 people. But the second you get your testicles in your hand and you pull them back to slap them onto the poker table, everyone gets quiet and then puts their head down to the felt to see if they can hear your nuts slapping the felt. It is one of the best parts
Jesus
of the night.
Christ. It's so weird. I don't know how it started. I don't know if it was a dare. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how it started. Although I do know, I'm willing to bet you're not going to dare show. You're going to show up with clean black underwear. Am I right?
No, the black is where you go wrong, bro. That just like buying a black car.
You're not going to go with white underwear.
No, I don't even own any white underwear. Come on. Let's be honest.
Who does?
Yeah, who's wearing the traditional old tidy whiteys anymore?
Oh, I know.
That tradition died with my father in 2005. I'll probably take special care to not do any dribbles. I'll shake the dew off the lily extra well.
There you go. That's all I can ask for. But no, Savannah's been prepped for the dropping of the boom. So
I bring the boom. I lower the boom. There's no question. I bring it. Frankly, I bring the heat. It would be really rad. So, I mean, didn't it occur to you, like, what if she did something wacky like that?
Oh, that would be, she's a grown woman. I'm not going to stop her. I have not thought of that. So, but you kind of hit on something that I was about to bring up to you. What would be the potential awesomeness of introducing a 23, 24-year-old woman to the 40-something-year-old poker game? Not all awesome, but she shows up in a bikini, man, or anything like that. But what is their potential awesomeness that we're not seeing that could happen? Where you go, well, okay, perfect scenario. Because actually, we'll see if she follows through. She said, can we smoke cigars? Can I bring cigars?
Who is this person? Jesus. Cigars? So,
now, you've not seen that. Who smoked a cigar? Like, once or twice there's been a cigar at the game in 13 years.
I've smoked cigarettes at the game, and I've dipped at the game, but never cigars.
I feel like someone once or twice has busted out a cigar. In 13 years, it's happened once or twice, but not regularly.
What she would bring to the dynamic, I mean, of course, if soiled panties became part of a side pot, that would rock. But, you know, I only see downside, to be honest, man. See downside.
Aside from any nefarious pseudo-sexual.
Well, that's the problem. With dudes and chicks get together, and invariably there's always a get-to-know-you stage where, you know, when let's say a Ralph shows up, it's somebody's buddy, people don't know him, so there's always, you know, a little get-to-know-you or whatever, but it's very quick that we find some common ground on something. I don't know how we're going to have common ground with a 20, you know, two generations removed and a gender removed.
Okay. Conversationally, what would you want to know anything about women in their 20s? This is your chance.
Yeah, I almost don't
do the whole care. How many times on the show do we talk about, what are people thinking when they do X? Or what are people thinking when they do Y? This is the time to go, all right, here's a question for you. I'm this age, you're that age. I'm driving down the street and I see this. Can you explain this to me? Why is this happening? Can you see that?
Yeah, but that's not something you know, no one wants to play cards and listen to me interrogate her on. So, Generation Z, you guys take a bad rap.
Well, I don't, no.
And she's not even a millennial, for God's sakes. She is a Z.
I don't know. Are you sure about that?
Yeah, I think Zs are like early to mid-90 birthdays, dude.
I'm going to double check that real quick because this is important.
So, you know, nobody, you know, these, especially these meatballs we play with, they're not going to find that titillating, dude. The only thing they'll find titillating is the sexual tension, especially when I drop trowel. They'll want to see her reaction. They're not willing to do, and to their credit, they're not willing to do stupid things like that. So they're going to be waiting for something like that.
She's on the cusp of Z and millennial, but going back to that, is there something that you and I can gain from this? Because if we're not talking sports, we're out on the whole home improvement talk.
Yeah,
we like talking to other people and getting some shtick going.
As soon as they start talking about...
I think I've done a great thing here.
Yeah, I don't know. You've... No. You, again, you could have... Even if you would have brought your sister, That's different. To bring in somebody totally new, two generations removed, nothing in common, you know, and then there's going to be a sexual tension there. If it was your sister, like, everyone would know in the deep recesses of their mind.
Stop.
Nobody wants to bang Jones. You can't bang Jones's sister, so there wouldn't be any of that.
Okay, I'm going to call you out a little bit. The last time you saw Eileen was when we did a Skype test for the show.
Yeah, so? And I gave her a compliment. What, you can't even give a woman a compliment anymore.
Oh, Eileen, your breasts are, they're so prominent.
I didn't say that.
Dude.
I said something like, they look giant on this Skype call. Your jugs
so
look
prominent.
Enormous.
I have to say that. I have to say it. Your breasts are so prominent right now. And you
prominent.
Were totally getting dead. You were totally getting dead voice from her. She's like, hi, Mike. It's just unbelievable. It's just, your breasts are just so prominent and dominant right now. How you doing, Mike? Unbelievable.
That was like, just me pushing buttons too, though.
Okay, so don't say it won't happen.
No, but I mean, again, that's just me pushing buttons, but like, of course, you, she, and I all know that I'm not going to bang your sister. And so her sitting at the table.
Don't know that I'm not going to bang your coworker.
You don't know that. That, you know, the divorce dude at the table isn't going to, you know, sleep with her. I mean, imagine that, dude. And stranger things have happened. Imagine those two hooking up.
Not at our poker nights.
I'm just telling you that, you know, you introduce that dynamic and just anything can happen. I think it's a bad idea. And now it opens the door. My old lady was asking last night, oh, so now I can play a game? And I'm like, it's not just one hand. If you buy in, you got to play. It could take 2 hours. She's like, oh, that's fine. You play two games in a night. I'm like, yeah. She's like, all right, I could see playing a game next time it's over here. And now I'm like, no, I don't want that. I don't want you to play.
There's not a chance that that would happen. She is tweaking you. There's no way that she would want to sit down.
But I can't say no now. It's hard for me to say no.
Cranes.
It's hard for me to say no now, dude.
Playoffs.
Because of you. You sullied the bloodlines, dude. You muddied the waters. So it's a violation of the bro code. And you know what? Maybe it'll work out. But you mark my words. If she hooks up with Bill, and then Bill does a disappearing act, and then the game comes to an end, it's on your head, Jones. It's on your head.
I will accept that because I have more belief in Savannah's taste than to fall into the trappings of Bill.
Yeah, she couldn't. There's no way
like
she would go
like
and sleep with a poker
intellectual
pal.
Intellectual person,
yeah.
Likes international films. She is gonna hear the diesel truck that Bill cranks up.
Yeah, the grave digger. Yeah,
the Ford F-250 and that like.
Yeah, 800 horsepower.
If there was an ounce of attraction, it will just go.
I don't know, man. I don't know. You never know what's going through someone's head, Jones. And I'm wondering what's going through your friggin' head this week. It's unbelievable.
No facial hair, no beanie cap. He offers nothing. No facial hair, no beanie cap, and a Ford F-250 with like a 30-inch lift kit on it that offers no appeal to any millennial anywhere.
Or maybe a Z. You never know. You don't know anything about Z's, Jones.
I know everything.
Do we have to use gender-neutral pronouns at this game? Tell me that that's not going to happen.
It might not hurt.
Zier call.
Zier here. Good to see you.
Okay, you know,
of
all of the shocking things that happened this week, the violation of the bro code takes center stage. It's prominent and dominant. My prediction that the McGregor-Mayweather fight being racially based is coming true as well. Yeah. They did the 4-city presser stop. We have some clips on McGregor-Mayweather and racism. Up next, the Shit Dudes Say.
In a world of beaten down middle-aged men,
frizzy panty waists,
and triggered snowflakes,
two dudes
say the shit you say,
think,
and feel.
And now,
we're ready to blow this shit up.
Announcing Jones and Mike,
version 2.0.
Coming to a phone,
car,
or computer near you.
Live video and audio.
Anywhere you are.
Any way you like it.
Anytime you need.
Words that sear through your mind like tiny little missiles of brutal truth that make you go, or freeing men from the malaise of middle age, giving women the straight dope on what their dudes think. It's the sh** dudes say that women want to hear. Go to www.patreon.com/Jones and Mike.
P-A-T-R-E-O-N.
Patreon.com/Jones and Mike. Support the show. Join our community.
Get rewards.
And help save Spaceship Earth from the hordes of fake news bullshit artists. Dude Say with Jones and Mike. Get the show for not much dough. Dude Say with Jones and Mike.
Rated M for mature audiences.
Jones, when the fight was made between Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather, I said, white guy, black guy, this is going to all boil down to race. White guys are going to buy this if it's $129. Did they announce the pay-per-view on this fight August 26th?
What's
the
cost?
$99. White guys are going to buy it because they want to see a white guy beat a black guy in boxing. That's always been like a thing, I think. Maybe it's the South Side Chicago upbringing. I don't know. I don't know what it is, but I think the white guys watch boxing when it's a white guy and a black guy, and they're rooting for the black guy or the white guy to beat the black guy every time. And I think black guys are doing the exact same thing. And in this case, it's MMA fans against boxing fans and all that. But throw all that out the window. The real attraction, I believe, is whites want to see a white guy win and blacks want to see a black guy win. And you refuted that.
Well, I didn't refute that was a possibility for some people. I don't think the initial attraction and why this fight happened is because Conor was white and Floyd was black. They were the two most prominent, flashy, showboatish performers of their sports. And one of them was willing to go over to the other to compete. So I do think the MMA angle and Conor's striking ability in MMA has enough people wondering. So for example, when you go back to a couple of years ago, there was no interest in James Toney fighting Randy Couture, and that was pretty much everyone knew the white guy was going to beat the black guy. But there's very little interest in that fight because nobody believed that James Toney was going to be able to pull this off.
It almost proves my point, though. My point is that usually in the boxing ring, the white guy is undermanned against the black guy. And so, again, like Joe Louis, Rocky Marciano, That is a point of contention. It's brought up in Coming to America, where black people are like, oh, Rocky Marciano was horrible. Joe Louis crushed him. Whites and blacks and boxing, that's always a hot button thing.
I'm not saying that it's not. That's down the line of, Jewish people supported Jewish fighters and black people supported black fighters and British people support British fighters. I mean, that's always, you always look for some angle of relatability. And since boxing's so one-on-one, those relationships are obvious. But what I'm saying is about this particular one, there were some dynamics where it wasn't just trotting out a white guy to face a black guy. There are some different attributes outside of race that make it compelling.
Well,
if people are following this and they want to just heavily focus on the racial aspect of it, well, then that's up to those people. And I'm seeing that happen, but I think that's only because we're so locked into only thinking in those terms. Like, I think about a lot of people who are into combat sports who are black. They don't like Floyd Mayweather. I know.
But who are they rooting for?
Combat sports, who are rooting for Pacquiao to beat Mayweather, who always root against Mayweather. And for sure, when you see the antics, that until I think McGregor made some missteps this week, but let's say 85% of what McGregor pulled off this week in terms of all these pressers, I think there are a ton of black people out there who are like, I love this guy. He's funnier than Floyd. He's putting on a better show than Floyd. Mm. Like, we even have Leonard Ellerbe, the manager of Floyd Mayweather, who was coming out this week and talking about, like, look, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to lie to you. I love Conor's swag. I tell him every day I see him, like, you're looking good. I think he believes he's going to win. I love it. I love the guy. I have no problem with him. I think there's a lot more of that out there. But because, you know, there's always this trained response of what racism is, the media and people at large are only going to look for certain angles because we've been trained and it's ingrained in us to only pick up a few things, and like moths to a flame, we keep going back to it. Conor can do one thing and it has to be so overly examined. But I don't remember any of the kerfuffle this week we've heard about McGregor, whether he's saying he was, you know, whether he was saying he was half black, or at one point he calls Mayweather a boy.
Well, right. So that was, you know, so there were four consecutive days of press conferences, and you and I watched all but the London one. The London one was at like noon central time. I was like, I'm not down with that. But the other ones were at a better time of the day for me, at like 4 or 5 o'clock central time. I want to say did they start in Los Angeles at the Staples Center, and like 15,000 people were there to see these two boobs. They had like a performance that was weird. You know, somebody up there singing a song. It really felt like the beginning of Rocky IV with Apollo Creed and, you know, Coming to America, James Brown performing and stuff. It's so weird. And so they come out and like Conor just was hilarious and really felt like, you know, he's just a naturally funny, gifted guy in those situations. And the crowd ate it up. And Floyd, I can't imagine why you wouldn't hire like a comedian to give you some stock lines.
Yeah, but he's not going to remember. I mean, we're really talking about someone who really I don't believe can read. I'm being serious.
Which like, Conor actually said that a couple of times.
Yeah. Well, did you ever see the video when 50 Cent challenges him to read and Mayweather tries to read?
What?
Oh, my God. It's so bad. It's so bad.
Dude, I want to see that.
I don't think Floyd Mayweather can really read. I'm serious.
No way.
He really struggles with reading, for sure. So to sit there and think, hey, we brought in, here's Jerry Seinfeld, and here's what he can say. I just see that falling right on his face. Look, this is a different thing for Floyd. Floyd, by simply being young, rich, and black, had this thing that he could present to the world that people would react to. Now you're introducing Conor McGregor, who, outside of boxing, Floyd at every turn. So this is really uncharted water, at least in terms of promotion for Floyd. Floyd's not going to be the brasher one. He's not going to be the most outspoken. Before, Floyd could just always go, look at my watch, $250,000. I'm on time. And like that was his line, just to always say how rich he was. And you can see he's still stuck to those same lines throughout this whole promotion, even though the whole world now knows he's at least in the hole to the IRS to a tune of $30 million. But all he knows is to go around throwing money on stage or to say, $100 million check. Haven't even cashed it.
Yeah, he had like a purse. He had like a man purse on stage, and he pulled out what he claimed was an uncashed check for $100 million. I have the 50 Cent challenging him to read a book. Let me play that for you.
Yeah.
It's like a selfie. It's like a, you know, self-made 50 Cent apparently like in his house. I don't know why they would be, if you can fill me in on that after this.
Woke up. I look at the computer. The computer say, Floyd said, fuck T.I., fuck Nelly, fuck 50. I'm like, what did he say fuck me for? Nelly fucked your first baby mama, Melissa, then took your fucking fiance. Say fuck that nigga.
This is a special ASLELS challenge for you, Floyd. If you can read one full page of a Harry Potter book, nigga, I'll give $750,000 to whatever charitable organization you want to. Fuck the bucket of ice, man.
Back in the
phone call from my man Jimmy Kimmel. Jimmy said if Floyd accepts the challenge, that he'll put it on the actual show so you can read it on the show. We don't want to put pressure on you. We know you can't pronounce those words in that Harry Potter book, so we're going to let you read Cat in the Hat.
What in the world? I don't understand why did they have beef in the first place, and now this makes Conor McGregor. I didn't understand during the Brooklyn.
Do you have the video of him trying to read?
I will retrieve that for you.
I mean, I'm not. If you can find it easily, great. But if you can't, there is. I've seen the video. It is so painful.
Of him trying to. Okay, so I have one here. It says 50 Cent was right. Floyd can't read. It's 4.5 minutes long.
We should be always delivering the best and finest in entertainment. The ratchetness and righteousness continues right now.
I don't know. It sounds like some podcast. Podcasts suck, don't they, Jones?
My man Jimmy Kimmel, Jimmy said,
unedited audio,
hiring vets. Go to showyourscribes.org, a website.
They probably beg for money on Patreon, too.
This is Floyd Mayweather.
Wait.
For $5 a month. And I just want to point out while Mike's working on this, you can get our show hot off the presses before everybody else does.
Yeah.
You know, just pointing it out there.
At patreon.com/JonesandMike.
Yeah. Okay. I'm Floyd Mayweather, and I've joined Heart Radio for the show, Your Stripes Movement, to support hiring vets. I'm Floyd Mayweather, and I've joined Heart Radio for the show, Your Stripes Movement, to support...
This isn't it, but...
Hi. Okay. I'm Floyd Mayweather, and I'm Floyd Mayweather, and I've joined Heart Radio for the show, Your Stripes Movement, to support hiring vets. Go to the show, yourstripes.org.
See, I wish I knew that we were talking about this because I would have found the video in advance.
And he tries to read like Cat in the Hat or something?
He tries some book like Cat in the Hat or some kid's book, and I've seen the video. And he hits a couple words and he's like, and then he just hits a block. And I'm watching it like, why did you even try to do this?
Well,
like,
he was struggling with his own name there several times. So, you know, and I mean, I've seen people who are smart and articulate and la, la, la. And then you get them in like a radio studio like that sounds like it was. And they there's like a pressure that they feel. So I don't really blame him for that so much. But he was like kind of stumbling on his own name. That's an issue.
So to go kind of back, like, you know, so now we're seeing, like, here's a guy who at least I think we can say struggles to read. So the fact that someone would be giving him like material that they could like go over scripts, I think that would be his worst nightmare. I think he'd rather fight two people at once. But, you know, and just going back to this whole all these pressers, like, the thing that what is driving me nuts about it is we're picking out these things, and I will absolutely say McGregor has made a habit of this. He tries to be outrageous, and he goes too far. He's done it before, where in trying to be funny, he just lays an egg.
Yeah, I know how that feels. Ignorant. Yeah,
he's done it before. There was an MMA fighter, Dennis Seaver, who was born and raised in Russia until he was 18, then moved to Germany. And then when they were competing, McGregor kept saying he was a Nazi. And it was just like, that's not funny. And it was like upsetting to the guy. Like, dude.
Oh, well, I think that's part of his game, right? Getting in your head.
I know, but I don't think, I think there are things that you just can't do if you're trying to rattle. I don't think, all the other things he was saying, going into, when Floyd goes into, when Connor goes into Floyd's bag and pulls out $5,000 and just goes, this is $5,000. This is only $5,000. And he's pointing out like that he does owe taxes. I think that's one thing. But when someone is just going out there and going, and you know, he's a Nazi, something along those lines, there are just some things that you don't touch.
Right.
Like we've said it before, like the Hitler line, the Nazi line, it never works.
Yeah.
Just drop it. Just let it go. Or when Connor was talking about, you know, he was bragging about when El Chapo was on the run, and he's like, I'm like El Chapo in his prime. It's like, well, not the comparison you want to make.
Bloodthirsty,
you know,
murderer.
He just dances into those little arenas. Now, to go down.
But again, he's not running for poet laureate. He's just an MMA guy, so people are like, eh. You and I were both watching the Staples Center, the first of the four. They did Staples Center, then they did Toronto, and I didn't really see that much. I saw some highlights. Then they did Brooklyn, and then London yesterday. So four straight days. And during the first one that you and I watched, you know, separately, but we were texting back and forth. He did call him boy, and you and I both went, boy.
We texted each other immediately and went, boy. Yeah. Now, I'll defend Connor on that. I'll give down, like, where I would go at him and defend him.
Yeah.
The boy I'll defend, because that's like an American, that's like a black and white American thing. I can say, having half my family live over in Ireland, they're not aware of that. You don't call a black guy boy, a black man boy. Although I do, and I could see how a foreigner would come over and be confused by it, because you see black men without hesitation referring to grown white men as white boys. So you're not going to make that connection. That's more of our thing. So I totally defend him on that one. Because even when I heard it, I texted you right away, like, oh, God, you don't say
that. I know,
that.
We seized up.
But that was us reacting as white Americans. Connor is not going to know that. And that's not the world that he lived in. That's our thing.
Right, but then did he say monkey or something in Toronto?
Now, here's the other thing. This is where this starts to drive me nuts.
Mm.
So when you look at people, and I've been thinking about it a lot this week, when people are so quick to throw someone in the box of the bucket of racist, or label something as racism. You know, oh, this person said this, he's a racist. Quickly throw him in the box. Like,
yeah.
You know, I saw headlines this week. Yes, Conor McGregor is a racist. And what always makes me uncomfortable about that is you quickly throw someone else in the box of the ists and the isms and the phobics.
Hmm.
And what does it say about the people who are outside of the box?
Right.
There's kind of this almost understanding, like, we are not that. And it always has me kind of scratching my head, like, I don't know that that's the case, just because one person says one particular thing, and now that defines them completely. We throw them in the bucket. They've been taken care of. We're outside of the bucket, and that's okay. The talk this week has been about Conor McGregor's racism. But, you know, at any one point, has the media brought up when Mayweather was calling Manny Pacquiao a little yellow chump who he was going to roll into a piece of sushi and cook up?
He did? That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's shades of you calling a guy with a surname Gong, telling him you were going to fry him up in a wok.
Yeah, no, I know. And I absolutely...
And you don't regret that at all, do you?
No, but we also knew each other and we had talked about it.
You were having like a fight, though.
So,
that was in the heat of anger, and you told
a complete fight.
You told an Asian you were going to fry him up in a wok.
Yeah. I mean, it's like 20 years ago now. I was like 21.
Yeah, oh, really? Okay, all right.
I was like 21, 22 when
I think
did
that was
it.
Your high water mark. That little like racist rant right there, that was your high water mark of masculinity.
That's another great example. It doesn't define someone in that moment, and it doesn't mean because you aren't in that bucket for that moment that you are not that person. The fact that everyone's throwing Conor McGregor in the racist bucket, but nobody is bringing up that quote, Floyd Mayweather, about Manny Pacquiao, cook that little yellow chump. I stomp the midget and make me a sushi roll and cook me some rice. Did we ever hear anything about Floyd saying that?
I got to be honest. That's cool. I wish Floyd would have flashed some of that this week.
Do we remember or make a big deal when Hector Camacho said that the downfall of Mike Tyson is he has a nigger mentality?
Whoa. I'm going to have to ask you to cease and desist right there. I know you're just quoting someone.
I'm absolutely quoting someone. I'm quoting Hector Camacho.
But that's
what
the
I'm
thing.
Saying is,
yeah.
No. Here's the thing. Like, even you being uncomfortable with me saying that.
I'm going to be way more comfortable dropping trow in front of your child coworker tonight.
And that's what makes me nuts about labeling someone a racist, is because for me to even simply say those words about another race, saying that about someone from another race, everyone goes, well, you can't do that. But then we could effortlessly throw Conor McGregor into the racist bucket, to double back to what you were bringing earlier, the monkey comment. So there's a clip of Floyd Mayweather where, and here's another thing about Floyd. Well, actually, play the clip first, and there's some things I want to point out.
Right. So just for the point of clarity here and the avoidance of doubt, did McGregor use the word monkey? Like, what was the offending phrase?
He did not call black people monkeys. I can explain that.
Okay, so this is Floyd Mayweather reacting to McGregor's racism, I presume, after the Toronto press conference. They do the press conference, or they do the event, and then they have a press conference afterward talking about the event that just took place. It's so strange, but this is what Showtime dreamt up for us, to get excited about the August 26th fight.
Diverse team, a diverse staff. And when I was young, I may have said some things that I shouldn't have said when I was young. But we live, we learn.
Wait a second. I think I missed it. Hold on. Let's re-rack it. We'll fix it in post here.
We won't, but that's okay.
Did you go too far? I think that disrespecting my daughter, disrespecting the mother of my daughter, disrespecting black women, calling black people monkeys, is totally disrespectful.
You're right. We finally agree. We were bound to agree at some point.
A diverse team.
So, he disrespected Floyd's old lady.
So now here's where it kind of drives me nuts about Floyd Mayweather and the public's reaction to Floyd, that because he won't fit into a certain narrative, that we only want to hear white people say racist things, and then that quickly gets run out to the press. To hear him speak like he is speaking about disrespecting black women when he has done 90 days in prison for beating the mother of his children. On several accounts, he's been in 2002, he was arrested for assaulting a woman. 2005, he was in a nightclub where he attacked two women. In 2011, I think it was 2011, was when he did 90 days in prison for beating the mother of his child. And jeez, here he is talking about disrespecting black women. And it floors me that nobody calls him out to that. And it's just, let's go back to, we have settled that we've put Conor McGregor in the racist bucket. And somehow we're letting Floyd stay out of that bucket.
Yeah,
and
I think
it's a narrative, and we're just going to go with that. Yeah. Now, to the monkey comment, Conor McGregor never called black people monkeys.
Not once, or just not this week?
Earlier in the week, he was being interviewed, and they made a comment about Rocky Balboa, about Rocky III. And in Rocky III, they go, this is kind of like the circus and all this stuff, all this media attention. It's kind of like Rocky III. Do you remember that? And Connor, who was born 5 years after Rocky III, was like, yeah, that was the one with the monkeys dancing, right? Isn't that it? And people have gone on YouTube. I've watched people follow this up. They take a clip from Rocky III where Rocky walks into an all-black gym and these black people who are training turn around and they look at him. And all these people are reacting to this video and they're going, Not one monkey in this. He's referring to black people. And this is the story that everybody's run with. Now, in Rocky III, there is a scene where Rocky is, and that's the one where Rocky is all high and mighty, and he's this big celebrity.
And then Clubber Lang is like the hungry up-and-comer,
yes,
like he used
exactly.
to be.
And he's in this
Such
celebrity
a great
gym.
Because
Conor McGregor said, that's the one with the celebrity gym where they have the monkeys dancing in it. And they go to a scene where Rocky is training in this celebrity gym, and there's all these people in there, and they're playing music, and it's a party, and there are women that are dancing. And then at one point, Mick says to him in the scene, Rocky, what is this? This is a zoo. This is a zoo. You got to get us out of this zoo. I think that's what he's referring to.
It's amazing the things you pick up, right? Like, I would go, is that the one with Clubber Lang, Mr. T, the up-and-comer? Mick wants Rocky to chase chickens again, but he's too slow and fat because he got rich and da-da-da. I remember all these things. I wouldn't remember the dancing monkey, but Connor's brain works differently than mine, clearly. It's all
the
CTE.
Here's the thing, though. You're not going to have, about a movie that's over 30 years ago. I can easily see myself talking to someone like, that was the movie with the plane when it was coming down into the land. And they're like, no, it wasn't a plane. It was a boat.
They'd be like, that was a minor point, but odd that it stuck in your mind.
Right, exactly. So here he is, and he just – and Floyd is allowed to go forward and say he called black people monkeys. He didn't call black people monkeys. Well, he got something mixed up in the scene. But I could easily see, because the whole thing was, it was a celebrity gym. There were people that were dancing in the gym. And then one of the trainers referred to it as two or three times as being a zoo. And I could see, like, oh, yeah, yeah, the celebrity gym. There was like a dancing monkey. Oh, no, it wasn't dancing monkey. But the trainer kept calling it a zoo. And then these dancing girls. Oh, yeah, right. Whatever. But to sit there, that's a hell of a leap to accuse a man of calling black people monkeys. When later in the same press conference, Floyd Mayweather, and nobody talks about it, decides to close out the show by calling Conor McGregor a faggot.
Whoa. See, this is where you go too far, Jones. Like, all you got to do is just let them see. This is where Jerry Springer can teach you a lesson. He was the ringmaster. He didn't say the bad things or the weird things. He let the guests say the weird and wacky things.
I know, but you gotta let the buttons.
You gotta tell me to play the clip, for God's sakes. Let's go to Floyd Mayweather calling Conor McGregor a word that we don't say on this show.
Yeah! We're gonna talk about this pussy.
Don't we say
you
that?
Punk,
yeah.
You faggot.
Whoa.
You hoe.
Whoa. We do not say at least one of those words, Jones. At least one of those words.
It's crazy to me.
You got
to
start letting the villain be the villain. Don't be the villain, Jones. All of these things that you're saying are going to be taken out of context and looped together or linked together, and you're going to sound like a maniac saying Nazi, the F word, the N word.
I'm just stronger than most. I'm not worried about it. And I know the message I'm delivering, but that's where this week made me so uncomfortable.
Yeah, did people get up in arms about him calling him using the F word there? I won't even say it.
No, I didn't. I haven't heard a thing. No one has challenged Floyd Mayweather. Hey, what do you mean, Conor McGregor? And that's the danger of calling these people these names. When Dennis Seaver got upset with Conor McGregor, I thought it was completely justified to be like, dude, don't go in front of a microphone in front of the public. I live in Germany now. I have for half my life. And now you're saying I'm a Nazi? Like, you can't go do that. In the same way I'm looking at Floyd Mayweather and being like, dude, when specifically did he call black people monkeys? Mr., you're disrespecting black women. Oh, ignore my 90-day jail sentence for beating the mother of my children, a black woman.
That's the thing, dude. In today's society and world, a word or a phrase means more than an action.
Now, here's where I do. Now, there are things where Floyd did the Dennis Seaver route, and it was like, oh, dude, back down. There's one point in the clip that you played previously.
Conor or Floyd?
Yes, I'm sorry. Conor, earlier in the week, or in these press conferences, or I'm sorry, Floyd references early on in one of those clips, he disrespected my daughter. Mm. Now, there was one part where they were, like, singing something negative about Floyd, and he goes to the daughter, like, whatever her name was, Aaliyah or something, like, beautiful Aaliyah, sing the song out. And it's like, dude, don't reference someone's kid. She's a teenage girl. I don't know what she's doing there, but she's there. But you don't reference the kid. So when he's like, dude.
Invited to cards, but don't reference her.
I invited a 24-year-old woman to cards.
Jesus.
We're talking about a teenage woman. Connor, you should not be referring to some teenage girl in a press conference.
I kind of liked when he would talk to Mayweather's wife, and she'd be like, you got some kind of mouth on you, and she would kind of like fight with him back and stuff. I kind of like that. Meanwhile, it's all, like you say, circuses, dude. Like, there was a report, and it later on was retracted and corrected by the London Telegraph. But there was a report yesterday that they shared the same private plane from the States over to the London presser.
Who?
McGregor and Mayweather. And then it turned out that they just arrived on two identical private planes and with their entourages. But for a while there, it was, you know, being bandied about online and social media and so forth that, see, the fix is in. These two are totally in on it. And I believe they are totally in on it, but they're just not stupid enough to take the same plane. That's why I believe this will be a trilogy, Jones, and the next and the third fight will be the first $1 billion pay-per-view take of all time. I have said that. It's on tape right along with all of your N-words and your F-words. So now, McGregor went too far in some of his comments, and that's fine. And then he, you know, in London, he went off the rails with his, he showed up looking like a pimp. And
was this London or was this New York?
No, you're right. In Brooklyn, he showed up looking like a pimp.
Which I thought was great.
Well, Kinda, you know, but his whole thing is I wear a suit and McGregor, you know, Mayweather can't afford a suit. That was a great angle. I liked that.
Yeah, but he had hit that drum enough. I think to watch him, and if you watch him walking into the arena in the mink coat and he's strutting, I don't like the mink, but yeah. Just the way you could go faux mink.
Yeah, yeah.
Animals don't have to die for your enjoyment. But just the way he's strutting in there with no shirt and, like, whatever that floral print pant was, hilarious.
Yeah, let's check this out here. It's Conor McGregor in Brooklyn.
This is painful, though.
Kind of trying also to refute the I'm not a racist stuff.
Do they not know I'm half black? Yeah!
No one reacts.
I'm half black from the belly button down.
Ay vey. I mean, a high compliment to black people.
No, I'll give him that a little bit. Fine. Here's where it's weird.
And just to show that that's squashed, here's a little present for my beautiful black female fans.
He's grinding.
Awful.
He's some sort of reverse twerk. The worst.
If you like what
just
you're
the worst.
You want to see more?
Yeah.
Ay vey. All right. No. So he went over the top there and really came off looking like, what did I? A woman I used to know used to say the term. Douche nozzle. He looked like a douche nozzle there, Jones.
Yeah, I think that's a weird term, but yes, he definitely did look that. And it was just like, I even get the line like I'm half black from the waist down. Like in a among men, among total bros, there is a compliment there, right? Now it's playing on a racial stereotype, but of all the stereotypes that you could play on, just among dudes, and yeah. We're going locker room mentality.
Black guys
that.
Loved it. They all went, yeah,
I'm sure they did.
They all
when you
whooped.
Start doing the here's from a black one, it was a little creepy, little pseudo-rapey.
Yeah.
Just when he starts grinding away like, this is for you, black women. It was just... That
cringeworthy dude.
Much of what he did this week, and it bothers me that he gets thrown in the racist bucket, and everybody feels like I'm outside the racist bucket, so yeah. I'm above the fray.
Yeah,
like, no, are you really? Are any of us really, truly outside of it? And like someone like Floyd's allowed to run free. I've had a problem with it. Him referring to Floyd's daughter, and then the grinding, like here you go, black women.
I got to be honest, man. I hate to say it. I got to think. I think in the black community, if you were to do a poll, I think that they'd be more outraged about Conor allegedly calling black people monkeys than Floyd Mayweather being convicted. Was he convicted or pled no contest? I don't know. Or he pled guilty. But one of those three things occurred, and allegedly, not allegedly anymore. The court of law, the people. Said he literally beat his wife to the point where he had to go to jail for 90 days. So
yeah, but
they would be more upset about the words than the actual deed, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's everybody, though. People do not care about women getting beat. That's across the board.
Well, I do. And that's...
Yeah, but by and large, sports fans don't. And we've talked about that outside of issues of black and white. We've talked about it on this show where people look... To if you're a great athlete and a spousal abuser, your fans will buy any little line that you throw out there that will some BS line that covers up your story. That's just across the board. Like, I'm sorry. People do not care about children and women getting beat if it's done by a great athlete or coach or manager. I mean, look at Penn State. They still want to trot up a statue.
No. I know. They're grotesque. They're grotesque there. Yeah, I mean...
So I do agree with you that a majority of his fans, even majority of his black fans, are more concerned about what they think Conor said in terms of referring to black people as monkeys, even though he did not say that, than Conor beating women in his life. But I would also say, across the board, the sports fans don't give a shit about beating women and kids.
So tonight, a woman's going to get beaten at your place in cards. And I'm gonna enjoy it.
You think so? Dude, you'll probably be out in like the first three or four hands.
I'm going to go all in every hand just so I can show her my dribble marks.
Right.
So just like we, you know, before this, when this fight was made, we talked about the great sideshows in sports history. And we talked about Muhammad Ali apparently fighting some like wrestler named Aoki or something. And the story went that Vince McMahon was commissioned by, I think, Bob Arum, the promoter of that fight. Does this ring a bell? He was commissioned to write the script of how the fight would go. And then they didn't, I guess, coach up Aoki that this is the script or whatever. So he didn't follow the script. Do you think that, like, something similar has happened with these pressers and stuff? Like, hey, let's work. Or even between pressers. Like, okay, let's do a review. There's people in a room with a whiteboard, and they're kind of drawing the next press conference's script of, okay, let's play up the racial angle. That's a good one. Or you think all this stuff just happened? Because I believe it all got whiteboarded out, even if it was on the fly. This week, I think that, and again, I think this now because I thought it then. I think race is the best angle of all.
Unfortunately, I don't think so. I don't think in terms of was it scripted. I think it's organized in terms of you go out first and you're going to say you're going to speak in this space. Then Floyd's going to speak in this space. Then we're going to have the picture here, and then you two can go back and forth. I think it's framed out, but in terms of I'm going to say this, I'm going to refer to that. I don't think so. One of the things I've noticed even from years ago when McGregor was really even before a big thing in the UFC, he would do interviews where he would even reference, like he did an interview over in Ireland on the Late Late Show, and he was saying like he is notorious for not doing any kind of pre-interview with producers or answering any of their questions, because he said, I've done that before where I feel something's rehearsed, and then when I go out there, I feel like I'm performing, and I'm just more comfortable just going out there. I trust myself to be able to answer questions and to be able to be a showman. And he was speaking about that before this is... He was speaking about that before he had even become big, and the fact that he's so much better than everybody else at it, I think that is his thing. I think he does trust himself that much that he knows, look, just let me know, okay, this is my 2 minutes to talk, his 2 minutes, and then we do this. Okay, don't fill in the blanks. I know. You can block it out for me. I'm fine with blocking, but don't give me any script. Because the flip side of that, too, is he's so much better than Floyd. Like, Floyd doesn't seem prepared.
Yeah, and you're actually winning me over because there was a... At one of the post-event press conferences, McGregor was on the dais, and somebody thought it was a good idea to let Floyd's dad, Floyd Sr., in the room.
Oh, that was
and
the
he
best.
Was heckling him, and then Connor was turning the guns on him, and they were fighting in there with the press corps all around. And Floyd Sr. is like, he's like mentally addled.
He's taking some shots, for sure.
Like, he seems like his IQ is, room temperature is too gracious. He seems like he's 60s, maybe in the 50s.
Oh, no, he's not. Yeah, no, I would agree with you. He is not a bright guy. Also, a guy who was training Oscar De La Hoya, and then when De La Hoya was going to fight Floyd Mayweather, said, I'll train you to fight my son, but I have to charge you double. He was willing to train someone.
Well, they were beefing at the time, though, weren't they?
They were, but could you imagine being in a fight with either of your two boys, like just in a disagreement, and to the point where for the right money,
you
would train someone to beat your child. So this is the type of mentality Floyd was raised with.
Yeah.
But, it just to speak to Floyd Sr., not a sharp guy.
No, no. But I mean, again, something that if you polled the black community, they'd be like, yeah, what's the problem with that, man? You got to get yours. You charge double to train someone against your son.
Do you think that? I don't know. I think most people would be like, what?
I know the black community, and they would applaud that, and I applaud it as well. That's capitalism, Jones. That is something to be admired.
I will disagree with you.
Well, we live in a weird world, Jones, as you well know, and this week there was a weird story about a man who may have been suicided by the Clinton crime family. Now, this isn't going to get political. We really don't give a shit about the Clintons or any of that nonsense, but this story is interesting, and the list of people who have had dealings with the Clintons who have died, that's interesting. We'll talk about that next. Shit Dude Say.
In a world of beaten down middle-aged men,
frizzy panty waists,
and triggered snowflakes,
two dudes
say the shit you say,
think, and feel.
And now,
we're ready to blow this shit up.
Announcing Jones and Mike,
version 2.0.
Coming to a phone,
car,
or computer near you.
Live video and audio.
Anywhere you are.
Any way you like it.
Anytime you need it.
Words that sear through your mind like tiny little missiles of brutal truth that make you go, or freeing men from the malaise of middle age,
giving women the straight dope on what their dudes think.
It's the sh** dudes say
that women want to hear.
Go to www.patreon.com/Jones and Mike.
P-A-T-R-E-O-N.
Patreon.com/Jones and Mike.
Support the show.
Join our community.
Get rewards.
And help save Spaceship Earth from the hordes of fake news bullshit artists.
Dude Say with Jones and Mike.
Get the show for not much dough.
Dude Say with Jones and Mike.
Rated M for mature audiences.
So, Jones, a political operative for the GOP named Peter Smith turned up dead this week, and it caught our eye because he was, I guess, instrumental in digging up dirt on Hillary Clinton. Do I have this correct?
Yes. Yeah, he was. He was trying to. He was. I think the story is he was trying to have some Russian hackers find him. Help find some of those deleted emails, I think was what he was responsible for.
Yeah. And, you know, my political stance, Jones, you have no political stance. You're politically agnostic. You think that all politicians, all voting even, is a waste of time. And we're going to be manipulated, leveraged, and oppressed by both parties. I agree with that in principle. My stance is never vote for somebody with an R or a D behind their name, or an I. Actually, it's I. That's the letter to look out for, because that stands for incumbent. Always vote for somebody new. So always vote the bastards out. So this is we don't give a shit about politics. We think it's all, as you say, circuses.
I know. I would agree with that. It's circuses. And at times it's appearing to be deadly circuses.
Right on.
That would have me concerned.
So in the Tribune, Chicago Tribune, dude, a political donor and operative from Chicago's North Shore, who tried to obtain Hillary Clinton's missing emails from Russian hackers, killed himself in a Minnesota hotel days after talking to the Wall Street Journal about his efforts, public records show. He was 81. And he left a suicide note, Jones, in which he said he's in ill health, and there was a life insurance policy expiring, which I don't know a lot about insurance. I have a life insurance policy. I think if you kill yourself, that's a red flag to me.
So he was found, I believe he was found with a bag over his head and like something with helium. Like there was helium like inside the bag.
That's so, the dude we play cards with who killed his dog with helium.
Right. So he had like a bag over his head and the helium. That's how he killed himself.
Who would
and
kill yourself
before
that
doing
way.
That? Yeah. He leaves a note.
Yeah.
That says this is not. What was the note? I'm trying to find the wording of the note, but it was something along the lines of, this was my choice or this was my doing. And like you said, yeah, something about ill health, but I wanted to be mindful of some $5 million life insurance policy. Well, someone who's smart enough to have a $5 million life insurance policy is aware that a suicide is going to kill that.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's, that was a way for them to kill. So he was killed. We're agreeing on that. Yes.
I gotta get, and boy, it feels like it.
So he was killed, and then whoever killed him wanted to screw his widow out of getting his dough, or his kids getting the life insurance policy. So that was like a fuck you to them.
How many plane crashes can one person experience via friends, you know, via a network of friends and associates?
Yeah, like I mean, they're like the La Cosa Nostra, man. These guys, and it only leads me to the question of like, is it them who order people to be whacked, or are they only the faces of a larger, you know, organization that's some shadowy cabal, and the people behind them are the ones who are like, oh, they're getting too close to our public faces. If they get to the public faces, they ruin our organization and our business model. So we have to protect these two idiots at the front forefront of our operation. So we have to have them whacked or whatever. Like, how far does it go? Because I it's weird to me to think that like Hillary and Bill are sitting in their kitchen in Chappaquiddick or wherever they had a house in New York. And talking about, like, oh, this guy's digging up dirt on us. Have him removed. Have him suicided. I don't even know if I believe that. But I believe that this organization that they're the fronts of, they have people killed.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard. I don't think... It's almost one of those things, like, you would say, well, no, there's not direct orders. But then, like, how would you know who to go after? Because would you want to you certainly, if you're in that line, if killing's your business and business is good, you certainly don't want to be the person who goes out and whacks the wrong guy. No, we were just having an argument this week. You didn't need to suicide him. You know, there does seem to have to be an order. Someone hits a criteria, suicided.
Oh, no, I'm saying that's happening. It's no, so clearly happening. But is it them two ordering it, or is it like whoever's behind them? There's some, you know, Wizard of Oz behind the curtain who's ordering this stuff.
In any scenario like that where it just seems to be happening in like a list form, I mean, don't you think it has to come from the top?
And so do you think that they're the top of the crime organization? Like, Hillary is literally saying, whack him. That's kind of cool, actually. I actually wish I would have voted for her.
You know you don't.
I don't think
Trump... No, you don't, because that would mean you didn't vote for your boyfriend.
I don't think Trump orders people to be killed. And that's the thing about the Trumps. I think that they're kind of clowns and stuff, but, like, I think that they're not... Like, the worst that they're going to get is that, like, Don Jr., who always seemed kind of touched to me anyway, like, he had some inappropriate meetings, and, like, he's going to, you know... There could be some issues with him, and then they'll get Trump to resign and blah, blah, blah. But, like, there's really no nefarious, horrible thing that they did. Like, the Clintons kill people. Like, I think there's no comparison between the two families. And I think the Bushes kill people, too.
Yeah.
That's badass, dude. I actually kind of like those families now. The Kennedys kill people, I think.
Okay, well, so will you not vote for Trump in the next election, and will you try to identify a killer family?
Yeah, I mean...
I'm going to hold you to that.
Do you think the Pritzkers kill people? Maybe I'll vote for JB for governor.
I don't know
anything
about them.
All right.
So, but, like, I'm going through a list.
Yeah, hit me with all it.
So for anybody who wants to say, like, oh, you know, you guys are political hacks or GOP guys or whatever, look...
I don't care.
I'm not even saying that... I know for sure the way these people have been eliminated or suicided or what have you.
But just what are the odds?
Look at the list. Look at the list. And just go down the list of all these names. Do you have it in front of you?
I don't. You'll have to read it to me. I'm a Dumbo. Right, so, but we'll link it in the show notes of the show, by the way.
Okay. So the first, you know, you go down the list, guy named Sean Lucas. Sean Lucas... was working with that Debbie Wasserman trying to rig the primary for Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Right, yes. And then...
Attractive woman.
Right.
Definitely card poker worthy.
Right. And then there was a lawsuit that was then going against Hillary Clinton over this. And he was like 1 month after he helped serve the lawsuit, he was found dead in a bathroom.
Oh.
And he was found dead on a he was found they just found him. They just found him dead. And one of the things that he had apparently been saying was like, if anyone comes and gets me, or if I ever am found to commit suicide, I am not killing myself. I'm not in the position where I want to do that.
That old gag. Then,
right. Yes. And then all of a sudden, he's gone. Yeah. Then there, you know, you go down the list. There's another Joe Montana.
Oh, I liked him. Notre Dame, San Francisco, fabulous,
quite,
best quarterback ever.
He served as a chairman of the DNC before Debbie Wasserman, and was a Clinton aide.
Montana,
and then reportedly died of a heart attack right after the WikiLeaks DNC email dump. Now, okay, maybe he had a heart attack.
Does it say how old he was? Was he like 80?
47.
Oh, jeez.
Let's go down the line. Yeah. Seth Rich.
Yeah.
Seth Rich, murdered in his affluent neighborhood, was shot in the back at 4:15 while he walked home from his girlfriend's apartment.
Yeah.
Now, he had previously, I'm actually just trying to pull this up right here while I'm on the fly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was supposed to be made to look like it was
a robbery.
Look like it was a robbery.
Yeah. But they didn't take anything. They didn't take his wallet and his cell phone. Yeah.
Right. Yes. So he is someone who ran afoul, also a WikiLeaks connection, who ran afoul.
And you know what? I think it was Kim.com. Like, there's a fat man who lives in, like, Australia or New Zealand named Kim.com who has been, you know, the U.S. has been trying to extradite him because he's got some cloud computing. Pirate Bay, I want to say, is the name of his, like, or Mega Upload or something like that. He had some, like, you know, he was accused of a copyright law infringement of, like, letting people, like, share movies and copyrighted music and so forth. He said that Kim.com tweeted that Seth Rich was definitely the source of for Julian Assange's WikiLeaks of the DNC leak of the hack, if you will.
Right. And then just funny, just, you know, out of nowhere, bullet goes into the back.
Yeah, execution robbery style, sure. In an affluent D.C. neighborhood, sure.
Right,
totally buy it. And, like, his parents now are out there being like, stop politicizing our child's death. You think they'd be like, hey, man, beat the drum. But apparently they got their life insurance policy money, and somebody told them, you guys better back off.
I'm sure that stuff happens. Did you ever hear Hugh Grant was going after in England? He was going after how aggressive the press was and trying to kind of clamp down on them being allowed to tap people's phones, or to not have authorities go after them and to really properly prosecute them.
Hmm.
And he had said he got really passionate about this, and he was going around doing all these speaking engagements, calling out different news organizations. And I heard him, I think it was on Howard Stern, and he was saying while he was doing this, at one point, the mother of his child received a phone call while he was on the air, like in some interview on the BBC.
The beep.
And it was just someone's voice just went, tell Hugh to shut the fuck up.
Oh, really?
And then they just hung up. And then one time...
could be just some listener, right? Or some
one
watcher.
One time then... Yeah, but they happen to have this woman's number.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
These are... People are accused of being able to have everyone's number.
Yeah.
And they're digging in on everybody.
Crazy. Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, some number goes to the mother... Not to him.
It was probably
the
his...
mother of your child.
Yeah, it was probably Hugh Grant's brother-in-law. Like, hates him. Tell him to shut the fuck up.
And then he was at a point where he said one time he was running through the city or driving through the countryside, coming back from one of these conferences, just on this lonely country road. And just shortly into the drive, his car started to break down.
Oh.
And one lone car came up, and it was someone who was working with one of these news organizations.
Jeez.
And they were like, "Hod," and he just came up and just started asking, like, almost kind of that mafioso type, oh, interesting that your car would break down in the middle of the road here, and interesting that you're having such problems with the work that we're trying to do. You know, one of those very nebulous kind of just general conversations, but at the same time very pointed in terms of the message. He was like, these people just showed up out of nowhere and just, like, totally dogged me.
So in this interview, did he say, and that's when I decided to dial it back and stop railing against them, or like, you know?
No, he continued with it, but he said I had to be very cautious.
Oh.
I had to be very cautious. And it's just kind of funny, like, even continuing through the names of this with, you know, of this, like this Clinton death list. There was a...
How many people are on it, by the way?
33.
33?
Here's another one. Gareth Williams, a transatlantic... MI6 spy,
yeah,
whose dead body was found naked, padlocked, and stuffed into a 32-inch by 19-inch duffel bag that was sitting in his London bathtub. He had illegally hacked secret data on Bill Clinton, according to the UK Sun.
Totally. I could see that happening. It could happen to any of us, frankly.
I mean, it's...
Isn't that one of the first things you do when you check into a Hilton, is you go up for a nice bath? To padlock yourself in the bathroom.
And then stuff yourself inside of a bag. Absolutely. How about a Charles Ruff?
And what did they? 61. What was the cause of death on that? Did they say, like, death by misadventure or something? What did they say? What did the coroner say on that one?
It just says, actually, Scotland Yard has announced the death as a suicide. Saying he locked himself in the bag. But his DNA was not found on the lock, and there were no palm prints on the edge of the bathtub.
Oh, yeah. So you can take one of two tacks here. You could either be like, you know, oh, the Clintons, you know, I didn't rail on them or whatever. Although it sounds like you got to have some big balls to do that. Or you could like just go like, OK, so like we're ruled by mafia capos and stuff, like in mafia crime bosses, the whole lot of them. And that's just the way it is. I guess that you've come to that conclusion that you can't stop the mafia. They're just going to run us. So we have to carve out our own little niche within the little system that they allow us to have.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, so that's why you don't vote. Why even bother? One crime family is going to replace the other crime family. Who cares? Voting for the Corleones is just as good as voting for any of the other five families.
Well, I do just feel that there's an overall system. Like, no one is really... Like, none of these politicians really care about anyone's, come on. Like, they really care about people's rights to, you know, property and taxes and marriage and happiness. Like, these people couldn't care less. I mean, honestly. Does anyone really...
No. God,
believe
no.
that?
No. No. John McCain or a Nancy Pelosi, they could give a shit. They could give a shit. What are some of the other juicy names on that list? I kind of like that padlock one. He was, maybe he was doing like the Houdini thing. Didn't Houdini like used to do that? Padlock and go into like a into like a water chamber?
I think so.
Maybe he was an amateur magician.
I think so. Well, there's another one. There's Bill Shelton, who is the fiance of Kathy Ferguson. Now, Kathy Ferguson was someone who died from a reported suicide in which she shot herself in the head through though her bags were packed and found next to her body, as though some people thought she was planning on leaving for a trip. Apparently, Ferguson was the ex-wife of an Arkansas trooper, Danny Ferguson, who had been a co-defendant along with Clinton in the Paula Jones lawsuit. So another, a lot, and it's so funny that so many people that are connected to all these like left-leaning people, all gun owners. So anyway, Bill Shelton, who was the fiance of Kathy Ferguson, questioned whether Ferguson had actually committed suicide. Shelton too was reported to have committed suicide with a gun at Ferguson's gravesite.
He was so despondent over not being able to crack the fake suicide story of his wife that he decided to eat a bullet himself.
Yeah. So this Kathy Ferguson shoots herself on May 10th, 1994.
Yeah.
Her fiance is going, no, this didn't happen this way.
Yeah.
And on June 12th, 1994, he chooses to go to her gravesite and shoot himself in the head.
Doing my Bruce Jenner impersonation, Caitlin.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't understand why Paula, you know, whatever her name is,
Paula Jones
and Broderick. I don't understand why those people haven't been whacked. When these seem to be so blatant Why haven't they just...
Is it because it's so obvious? I don't know.
Like, why couldn't, like... But, I mean, here's the thing. So, like, the Russians, like, they have whacked the political opponents using, sure, like, polonium. Like, a polonium-tipped, like, pen. Like, just a little bit of that polonium on, like, a pen or something. And they jab it into you, like, in a crowded hotel lobby or whatever. And, like, you die. You get sick and you die, like, within a day. So, like, they whack their political enemies over there, like, so effortlessly. Like, it seems like the Clintons would definitely be able to have, you know, access to the things that could make Paula Jones look like she had a heart attack. Or Regina Broderick? What's her name?
Well, you know, it's funny, as I'm talking to you.
She now, died?
No.
Oh, yeah, that'd be
as
cool.
I'm talking to you, like, the articles that I had that had it listed, it's now the website is not loading. Like, all of a sudden, it's, like, scrambled.
The Clinton crime family is listening to this now on YouTube.
Yeah, now I have some other thing that's just popping up onto my computer, even though I didn't click anything.
Tell Jones to shut the fuck up.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding.
Wait.
All right, well, here we go. Let's see. Maybe this is a good one. Ed Willey. In her book alleging a campaign of slander and intimidation orchestrated chiefly by Hillary Clinton, Kathleen Wiley. Really. Oh. I just saw the different name.
Is it Wiley? Oh, I thought it was Willie. Anyway.
Is it Willie?
Yeah.
You tell me. We'll go with Willie. Yeah. Kathleen Willey pointed a finger of suspicion at the former first couple for the death of her husband, Ed Willey, who believed to have killed himself. Kathleen Willey, who she said was groped by President Clinton in the White House, acknowledged in an interview in November of 2007 that she stood by speculation she posed about her husband's demise. In Target, this is the book title, Target, Caught in the Crosshairs of Bill and Hillary Clinton, asked if she suspected if her husband, Ed, a lawyer and son of prominent Virginia lawmaker, was a prominent Virginia lawmaker, was murdered.
Yeah, you and Floyd have to go and take a reading class, I think.
Well, I gave you the link to this article.
I know, but I can't read everything on this show. Shit.
Please, give me a break.
We'll fix it in post. We'll fix your reading in post.
Please, you're not even going to bother.
I got pictures of Kathleen up on the screen, by the way. I like that short crop hair that she's
got. She looks good. She looks good.
There's a lot of Hillary, though. She's got close cropped hair. Not so good.
Right. No.
Oh, my God. This one, just terrible. Oh! At any rate, go on.
So, and now it's doing it again. It's not allowing me to scroll down.
See?
That's kind of weird.
Yeah,
so
we're kind
of, I think something's happening, Mike. That's the hard thing that's making, as I'm scrolling through it, the first couple ones were fine.
Yeah.
And now, like, I'm still having to scroll and pull down to get the next sentence.
Listen,
now,
man,
I'm not getting it.
It could get worse from here, bro. It could get worse from here. Be happy that it's only your internet being affected presently. Apple, Facebook, Google, they're all on to us. Like,
okay, well,
somewhere.
Here's one I was able to pull up. Susan Coleman, who was pregnant at the time of her death, was rumored to have had an affair with Clinton while he was still an Arkansas attorney general. Clinton had been Coleman's law professor at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville. Though Coleman died of a gunshot wound to the back of her head, her death was ruled a suicide.
Yeah, and then, you know, the famous case of Vince Foster as well, who suicided himself. I mean, like, just imagine, dude, have you ever known anyone who, like, dude, you know somebody who got beheaded, so, like, you win, sure. You win, but...
Sort of.
Yeah.
It's a weird way to win.
I remember the first time, like, I had a neighbor standing in my house once, about 15 years ago, who told me his cousin got murdered, and I lost my shit. I was like, you've had somebody in your circle get murdered? Tell me about it. And he was like, I don't really want to talk about it, but I was, like, geeked out about it. Like, talk about a privileged life we've led. Like, I don't know anybody who's been murdered or, like, you know, committed suicide. I know two people who committed suicide. Both their children, or in both cases, their children found them. So I'm just, I hate it. I hate them. I hate people who kill themselves, la, la, la. But by and large, we live a pretty charmed existence, you'd have to admit. We don't really know people who've been murdered or suicided or who have committed suicide or whatever. And that's why we sound like we're unempathetic or unsympathetic to people like Chris Cornell or whatever. We just had charmed existences, and I'll admit that. But Have you ever known anybody who died in suspicious circumstances or who hung themselves or anything?
No, I can't think. I mean, a drug overdose, but I can't think of anything that would be a suicide or a murder. I know one of my sister's classmates. I take that back. I know two people that were murdered as young people.
A guy we went to high school with ended up getting whacked.
Yeah, I didn't really know him.
I knew him, and I was afraid of him. And I had a right to be. He killed like a gas station attendant in a robbery, and then he killed himself in prison. So good for him.
Yeah, but I can't say. Yeah, I don't really know. I mean, it's amazing when you go as big as their social circle is, and you have to imagine that the Clinton social circle is much bigger than ours, exponentially bigger. It is a lot of suicides. That's a lot. I mean, and this was a list of like 33. What did I go through? Six of them? And weird ones. You know, a gunshot to the back of the head ruled a suicide. Someone stuffed into a duffel bag, tucked into a bathtub.
I know.
Suicide.
I shouldn't take such pleasure and joy in this, but I
am.
You know,
a man shot in the back, robbery is the official source that he was murdered and robbed, but nothing was taken.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot.
Impaling yourself on a pike in the town square. Weird way to commit suicide,
strange,
got to admit.
Odd choice.
Shoving a 15-foot metal pole up your ass as a method of suicide. Weird.
Even if someone would go, okay, well, here are the holes in some of the stories that you've just given us, and would like go to defend this Clinton death list of 33 people. Isn't it kind of weird that you can get up to a number of 33?
33. And in numerology, that matters, I think. I think they stop at 33. I bet my prediction is no more suicides, no more strange deaths. 33 is like, I think that's like a Freemason thing, actually.
The
highest order of Freemasonry is 33, I believe.
Okay, but then this Peter Smith then would be 34.
Oh, shit. Because
the list that I had came after that.
And his method of death, dude, let's just revisit this just so, you know, for the avoidance of, you know, doubt and purposes of clarity.
Bag overhead.
81 decided helium to put a bag over his head, and he knew that helium, and I only knew this because we know a guy who whacked his dog this way. He piped in helium, and helium doesn't kill you directly, but it like takes all the oxygen out. It forces all the oxygen out, and so you suffocate. So you would pick that as your way of whacking yourself. A mountain of pills, a gunshot to the head, too easy. We have to go helium bag over the head.
I don't know. Maybe I could almost see that, because the guy who whacked his dog said that was the dog was very peaceful when it went.
Well, right, but he knew about that stuff because he's a paramedic, and so, you know, he learned about that at some point.
Maybe he Googled it.
I don't know why.
But here's the thing that's weird.
Maybe he listened to our show. We talked about that just a few weeks ago, actually.
Yeah, here's the thing, though, that's weird.
What if Jones?
If we are playing a role in this?
What if Peter W. Smith listened to Shit Dude Say? We're down a man.
That's a shame.
I know.
We can't afford to lose anyone.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we can notice it on our podcast stats. So you're saying, okay, it's possible he Googled what are gentle ways of killing yourself, blah, blah, blah. You think they would have mentioned that in the article? Because I'm sure they look into your Google history and stuff now as part of these death investigations. You know, these people who are, you know, it's ruled a robbery, but there's nothing taken. It's a foiled robbery. It's strange. It was botched.
Right.
You know, this shit, I don't think people care, honestly. I don't think people give a shit at all. And are you happy about that? Or would you, like, I mean, all of this Russia, Trump stuff, it's so exhausting to me. I don't care anymore about it. And honestly, I don't think anybody else does either. I think it's only the media that keeps on, and like crazy ideologues, like 10% of the lefty ideologues, they care about it. But by and large, nobody cares about this stuff. It's Van Jones. I like Van Jones, by the way. lefty commentator on CNN. I like that guy. I could listen to that dude talk all day long. He is just, he is sexy. But he called it a nothing burger, admittedly, before all this Donald Trump Jr. shit happened. But even the media is admitting this is a nothing. We're just doing this day after day, I guess, for ratings. People must be interested to the degree where they're watching about it. But
Here's the thing. I think the Trump-Russia thing is like it's like a movie. It's like a spy thing. There's some Schadenfreude, but then if you're really just interested into the story of it, it's like watching a live spy movie. There's something exciting about it. To see like this Peter Smith and, you know, the popping the helium into the bag, taking himself out, and in all caps, that was the thing that I now remember about the letter. In all caps, he wrote down, no foul play whatsoever. Like,
yeah,
that is actually something that's very scary for people to contemplate. That's pretty obvious. I'm sorry. Just a couple weeks ago, we were talking about a guy who puts together a man camp, teaches men to be men, and they fight each other, and then, you know, they have to go out and swim in the ocean, and
Garrett
then
J.
they have
White.
To go into the graveyard, and they're going to die in 20 minutes,
yeah.
And they have to think to themselves, well, if I was going to die in 20 minutes, what would I write to my loved ones? So here's this guy. He knows he's going to take himself out.
Yeah.
And he chooses to do it through a bag over the head with helium.
Yeah.
Then also writing down, no foul play whatsoever
in block letters
in his suicide note.
Yeah.
And then also refers to his life insurance policy, which anyone who has a life insurance policy would certainly know is now null and void when you kill yourself.
Yeah. Negative indemnity. No double indemnity. If he would have made it look like a murder, it would have been double indemnity in most policy cases. Oddly, I knew what double indemnity was when I was a child. I think I learned that term, and I was like, I'm going to drop that in front of my parents just to scare them. Just to shot over the bow.
Yeah.
Murders, that double indemnity.
Disturbing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're probably going to start hearing that get tossed back your way pretty soon.
Oh, definitely, dude. No, my children aren't. They're not going to look into that stuff the way I looked into things. So, so you don't think that people are titillated by this to a degree, like, because clearly the media doesn't even report on this stuff at all. Like, we saw the story, we did a little bit of digging on this Peter W. Smith or whatever, but like, we're connecting the dots on our own. The media they're not going to do it for us,
right? No, I think what it is when you look into a story like this, you see nobody's reporting it, nobody's connecting the dots. I think that makes it even scarier. And it feels like, I'm sure some people will hear us talking about this segment and go, why did you even do this segment? Why are you putting this out publicly?
I'm wondering that myself.
And I think it's those things, those factors that keep people silent. The Russia thing, this is a game.
Oh, you
it's
think people are afraid? I think just people don't care. I think they're like me. They're like, I actually want a killer in the White House.
No. I think people hear this stuff and they're afraid. It seems too plausible and too real, and they don't want to contemplate that. I think that's also why people think there was one shooter in JFK.
Ah! 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 Ah!